You're in the middle of nowhere, with the day fading to a pale band on the horizon. From the descending dark, a bus pulls up, brightly lit inside, but with no name, no destination. The door shuttles open before you. There is no driver. Do you climb aboard? Of course you do. It's why you're here. Welcome to the Gray Line. Today's journey takes us to Fremont, Ohio, a place in the dead center of what is commonly referred to as the Heartland. A charming euphemism, but the heart can be a fickle thing. It can inspire a person to joy or drive them to madness. Speaking of which, you may wish to keep your distance from that man across from you. You'll figure out his sad, terrible story soon enough. Fortunately, he isn't the main focus of tonight's tale. That honor goes to a creature that you may find, at first, surprising, but ultimately pleasantly inevitable. She is, in fact, the sort of creature that inhabits the event horizon between poisoned love and the Gray Line.
The center of the universe stalked a squirrel through the weeds, along a chain-link fence, barely hearing the nearby cacophony of the school playground. The weeds were still wet with morning dew, but the center of the universe didn't care. She hunkered low, her chin level, her nose twitching, her velveted feet navigating silently toward her prey. If she caught the squirrel, she'd toy with it for a while, of course. Then she'd kill it and take it home to show the old man. The old man didn't know how to stalk and toy with and kill his meat. All his meat came already dead, wrapped in plastic. The center of the universe was a little embarrassed for him. She would show him how it was done. The squirrel was sniffing along the fence, moving in economical darts and squirts, its tail raised, twitching. It sensed the center of the universe nearby and bolted without a look back. The center of the universe watched it clamber through the chain-link fence and scurry across the basketball court, tail fluffed, zigging and zagging like an idiot. Another day, squirrel, the center of the universe thought without words. Another day. She rose from her haunches and padded along the damp weeds, shaking the dew from her paws and whiskers. She knew what the rest of the world thought she was. The humans called her a cat. The ones who knew her called her Cora. She allowed this. Some of the humans she allowed to pet her. All of them she allowed to feed her. She knew a lot more of their words than they assumed, and that was just fine with her. It was cute how much smarter they thought they were. Cora, the center of the universe, patrolled around the fence, then crossed the basketball court toward the playground. The human kittens were running around there in the morning sunlight, shouting and chasing each other, clambering on brightly colored slides and swings. Some of them called to Cora, but she was in no mood today. She trotted away, continuing her morning patrol. The old dark-skinned lady was in her garden.
Good morning, Cora.
Cora purred for her, twined around her ankles, until the woman slid open her glass back door, invited Cora in, and put a glop of food scraps into the metal bowl by the door. There was a little meat, some vegetables, the sharp whiff of red sauce. Cora picked out the meat and left the rest before continuing on. The sun climbed over the trees. Cora found shade in a narrow alley, slunk along the brick wall, her ears perked up, alert and curious. She often smelled a he-cat here, and today was no different. His pee marked his patrol, telling Cora to stay away. But Cora mostly ignored this. They could share a patrol, so long as they patrolled at different times. A huge brown truck lumbered along the alley, kicking splashes out of the puddles, rocking through potholes. Cora hid under a dumpster until it was well past. Beyond the alley was a warren of narrow streets and crowded houses, all of them smaller than the old man's, shouldered in like birds on a wire. Cars and vans lined the streets. The sidewalks were humped and broken over rambling tree roots. Bikes and plastic toys littered the weedy lawns. Cora trotted along a narrow driveway, under a yellow pickup truck, and into a tiny backyard landlocked between two garages and a leaning fence. A man came out of the house, sweating, babbling shrilly to himself as he carried a parcel over one shoulder. The parcel was wrapped in thick blue plastic, wound with orange bungee cords, and smelling of fresh meat. Cora perked up. This wasn't normal meat, like what the old man brought home from the store. Cora could tell by the scent of it. This package was human meat. Human kitten meat by the size of it. The man saw Cora and stopped, his eyes bulging with wariness, his mouth pulled into a tense scowl.
Get out of here!
He rasped hoarsely. He didn't yell it, but kept his voice strangely hushed, and so Cora didn't move. She sat down in the corner of the yard and watched the man. He was younger than the one she lived with. His hair was brown, his sweaty cheeks coarse with stubble. The man carried his wrapped human meat to the garage, kicked open the door, and lurched inside. There was a soft thump of plastic on concrete. A moment later, the man sobbed hugely and began to whine in high, breathless, bubbling gasps. Cora found a break in the fence and wormed through, her tail up. She stalked the mailman for a few blocks, angling back toward the old man's house where she mostly lived. He was sitting on the porch reading a book, nursing a tepid mug of coffee. Cora hopped up onto the railing, and he greeted her gruffly, reached to give her a perfunctory pet between the ears. She accepted this and looked out at the trees, glared at the birds where they chattered noisily. Inside, the parakeet squawked from its cage, as if calling to his avian brothers outside. Birds are so stupid, Cora thought without words. That evening, the old man took out the trash, and Cora slipped out behind him, darting into the dark for a rare night prowl. She followed her regular route along the chain-link fence, across the playground, now scoured with night wind and blowing leaves, along the dumpster-lined alley and into the warren of older, wary houses. Televisions flickered behind curtains. Food wrappers blew along the gutter. Cora sniffed them briefly, bored, then trotted on. There was a police car in front of the house with the tiny backyard and the garage. The human meat was probably moved by now. Cora knew that humans didn't leave their dead lying around. She also knew that the police car meant something bad had happened. But the red and blue lights weren't flashing, and the two black uniformed humans weren't dragging the dark-haired man away. They were talking to him on the house's tiny porch in the glow of the overhead light. The man was smoking a cigarette, talking fast, clearly nervous. Cora wondered if the police humans couldn't see it.
He left for school just like every morning. I kissed him goodbye. I gave him his lunch.
He stopped abruptly and put the back of his hand against his mouth, stifling a choked gulp. One of the police humans nodded and wrote on a pad. The other looked around the dark street as if mapping it. A minute later, the police car drove away with the police humans in it, leaving the dark-haired man on the porch. He stood in the glare of the porch light like a man on a tiny, bald stage and smoked his cigarette. He blew out a puff, raked his hand through his hair, and then stopped. His eyes locked on Cora where she sat primly on the curb, a faint feline smudge in the dark. Humans have terrible night sight, she mused smugly.
You...
The man moaned and slumped weakly.
Beat it, cat. You don't know anything.
He dropped his cigarette, ground it with one shoe, and then looked back at Cora. He seemed to want to say something more, but didn't. Cora glared back at him serenely. When he went back inside, locking the door, she wended her way back home, pausing only when she came across a raccoon knocking over a trash can. She watched, considered facing down the raccoon for whatever was inside, then decided to let the dumb old thing have its prize. She slept on the porch. The next morning, the old man came out dressed in a light jacket and hat. He scolded Cora for sneaking out, then said,
I've got an appointment at the hospital, but I'll be home for dinner. There's food in your bowl.
He held the door open for her. Cora looked at the door, then him, and considered just staying there on the railing. But then she smelled the cat food inside, a whiff of fancy feast, her favorite, and deigned to cooperate. She patted in, ate with gusto, and sat back to lick her chops, savoring. The old man left, driving off in his little green car. Cora spent the rest of the morning dozing on the windowsill, slitting her eyes open when people walked past, or when cars tooled along the lane, or when the birds got excited and chattered in the trees. The parakeet squawked and screeched from the kitchen, but Cora barely noticed. Evening turned the sky dusky, and the man didn't come home. Cora nudged open the basement door, padded down the steps into the cool dark, hopped nimbly to the workbench, then to the ledge of a small high window. The window was unlocked, hung from the top on hinges. She had long since learned that she could pry it open with her paw and slip out, into a little well beneath the bushes, currently carpeted with dead leaves, and out into the side yard. She patrolled. The old dark-skinned woman wasn't in her garden. Cora looked in through the sliding glass door. The television was on, showing some news program. A human woman with voluminous blonde hair was talking. Cora picked up some of the words. "Missing," the blonde woman said. And next to her appeared a picture of a boy human. He was smiling, dark-haired, kneeling in front of a wrapped present, a Christmas tree glowing behind him. "Kidnapped," the blonde TV woman said. "When last seen," she said. Cora looked at the food bowl on the other side of the glass. She glared at it, as if it should be ashamed of itself. Giving up, she trotted on. There were human kittens in a nearby backyard. They knew Cora's name, and she allowed them to pet her until a voice called them inside for dinner. Cora sat down beneath the swing set and watched them go inside, a little wistfully. The smell of death was in the air, a high, sickly smell, like fancy feast left to sit in the sun. Cora followed it, curious, and came to the house with the tiny front porch, the weedy backyard, the garage where the human meat had been stored. The smell wasn't coming from the garage, though. Cora knew it wasn't the smell of rotting meat. This was a different kind of death smell altogether. The smell came from inside, where the man's voice muttered hectically and footsteps thumped and bumped. The kitchen windows were open, Cora saw. There was a tear in the old screen down in one corner. She leapt up onto a garbage bin, then to the flower box, then pressed her head through the tear, looking inside. The kitchen was dark. It smelled of old cooking, congealed grease, half-gone fruit. The man was in another room, stalking around, muttering in a high, whining voice. He was talking on the telephone. "Custody," he said. "Since the divorce. Blame. I'm as worried as you." Cora wormed her lithe body through the tear in the screen, widening it. She dropped lightly to the edge of the sink, then down to the stained linoleum floor. Next to the cluttered table stood a small suitcase. It had a cartoon character on it, a smiling yellow creature with a square body. Cora padded over to the suitcase, sniffed it, then hopped onto it, balancing with ease. She sat down and curled her tail over her paws. The man stalked nearer, his voice rising. Cora watched his shadow as he moved into the doorway of the kitchen. He stopped when he saw her, gasped and startled violently, and dropped the phone. It struck the linoleum with a sharp, fatal crack, landing face up, its screen splintered, its light snuffed.
"What are you doing here?"
he wheezed shrilly, his eyes bulging and glassy.
"Get out of here! What are you? You don't know nothing! You don't know nothing!"
He scrabbled blindly at the table, not taking his eyes from Cora, and grasped a plate and a glass. He flung them at her, groped for more, his words giving way to a strained, watery scream. Cora leapt from the suitcase as the plate and glass missed her, shattered to the linoleum in the cupboard beneath the sink. She jumped to the countertop, bolted easily to the window, and slithered back out into the darkness. She slept on the porch again. When the sun rose the next morning, the old man still hadn't come home. Cora didn't wonder about it, but she was hungry again. She patrolled. The old woman was carrying in sacks of food from her car. She called Cora by name, invited her in, gave her a scoop of dry meow mix. Cora ate it, but made sure not to enjoy it. When the bowl was half empty, she sat back and glared at the woman. She was putting away her groceries, opening and closing the fridge and cupboards, humming to herself. She didn't get Cora's hint. Half an hour later, Cora was out in the sun again, darting along the alley. She smelled the he-cat again. His pee was fresh. She wondered if he lived in one of the stores along the main street. What color would he be? Was he also the center of the universe? Could the universe have two centers? She drifted in and out of yards, skulked along fences, stalked the squirrel for a solid half hour before it ran up a telephone pole and bounded away along the wire. Cora watched, mildly rueful. "Another day, squirrel," she thought without words. The scent of death was on the air again, faint but unmistakable. Cora followed it, but it didn't lead her back to the house with the torn screen. It led her to a dribbling creek bounded by trees, then to a copse of shadowy, scraggly woods. A yellow pickup was parked in the woods, leaning in a narrow hollow. The dark-haired man was there with his human meat package. The human meat was going bad. But that wasn't what was making the death smell. Cora hopped up on the blue plastic-wrapped parcel. The man didn't notice. He was kneeling in the weeds, digging frantically, feverishly, slinging dirt over his shoulder along with wheedling, whining words. "So sorry," she said. "Better this way," he said. "No more hurting, no more angry words," he said, between hitching sobs. A beam of sunlight filtered through the trees and alit upon Cora. She basked in it, squinting, unsurprised. She was the center of the universe, after all. The sun always found her. The man flung away the shovel. It skittered through the weeds and struck a tree. Spastically, he whipped around on his knees, flinging sweat from his soaked hair, reaching for the blue-wrapped parcel. He froze in place, a choke stifled in his throat as his eyes alit on Cora. Alit on her just as the sunbeam had, illuminating her like a spotlight. For a long, pregnant moment, the man seemed unable to move. He was like an ugly, human-shaped statue, sweat dripping into his eye, his lips pulled back taut, revealing the closed zipper of teeth. When he finally spoke, it came out in a hoarse, babbling wheedle.
"Of course,"
he said, and followed the words with a single barking laugh.
"Of course, you're right. How did I not see it before?"
His eyes jittered in his skull as he stared at Cora, as if finally truly seeing her. She sunned herself, yawned, glared back at him. He nodded. The movement was jerky, too fast, as if the man was a badly handled puppet.
"Of course, it's perfect. How did I not see it before? We'll finally be together. Together we'll she can never find us. It's perfect."
The words tumbled over each like marbles, mingled with cracked laughter. He crawled backwards, away from Cora and the dead human meat, not taking his eyes away from her. He nearly fell into the hole he had dug, scrambled over it, then lunged to his feet and half lurched, half fell, onto the open back of his yellow pickup. He began to rummage around, muttering, whining, leaking mad laughter. Cora got bored. She hopped off the human meat parcel out of her sunbeam and patrolled on. The school playground was empty, even though it was daytime. Maybe it was one of those days called the weekend. No school on those days. Letters had been soaked onto the windows of the school, ghostly white against the unlit glass. "We miss Jared." Cora thought the humans would be amazed to know she could read. Wind blew and the sun started to go down again. The center of the universe meandered her way back toward the old man's house. She retraced her steps along the dribbling creek, sniffed at a few beer cans next to the charred embers of an extinct campfire, then bounded on again, leaping easily through the tall grass, startling white moths out of the shadows. The yellow pickup truck was still parked in the hollow. The dead parcel still lay in the tall grass next to the shallow hole. Cora stopped and surveyed the scene, sat down beneath the dangling, gently swinging boots of the dark-haired man. The death smell had gone from him now, along with whatever passed for life. He was just human meat now, hanging from a tree branch like a lost kite. Cora purred. She licked herself, washed herself for a time, fussily extending her back legs to get at those hard-to-reach places. She got back to her porch, and the old man still wasn't home. She had a feeling that he probably would never come home again. His appointment at the hospital hadn't gone as planned. The thought awoke something strange, miles deep in her bottomless feline heart. Was it a flicker of actual sadness? She marveled at it. She was amazed that she was capable of such an emotion. It passed soon enough, though. She looked around the porch, considered the window that she had sat in so many times. She'd missed the house a little, too. But she had at least a dozen other homes, not like the parakeet. Stupid thing would probably die as well. Oh well, thought the center of the universe, wordlessly. Things lived and things died. But not her, of course. That went without saying. The humans said cats had 9 lives, but that was just silly. Cora didn't have 9 lives. Cora was forever. She spied the squirrel on the other side of the street, clinging to a fat tree trunk, flicking its stupid brush of a tail. She decided to allow it one more day.
Alas, a just reward, meted out by the mysterious and ineffable influence of the center of the universe. You may think her cold, self-serving, a little aloof, but at least let us be glad that she is out there, blithely carrying out her mission to see that justice, in whatever form, is ultimately served. Thank you for riding with us. Do collect your luggage, should you have any, and mind the closing doors. We look forward to seeing you next time, but, as always, do remember, not every journey ends so conveniently. Next time, you may find yourself lost forever, just one more tale told on the forgotten backroads of the Grey Line. The Grey Line is written and produced by me, G. Norman Lippert. The Center of the Universe featured the voice talent of Jeannie Lynn, narrator, myself as both doomed men, and Kelly Lingle as one of Cora's many admirers. If you liked this episode, as always, do tell all of your friends and a few choice enemies. Also, do subscribe to The Grey Line and leave me a review on your favorite podcast app. I look very forward to hearing from you, as does Cora.